Good afternoon. Welcome to Wheeling Free again. This is Greg Johnson along with Joan and Terry. We trust you will enjoy the show. In today's program, we explore relationships, sexuality and disability, particularly relationships and the intellectually disadvantaged. Then a rundown on Awareness Week. And now, over to Joan.
For the disabled, establishing relationships can be particularly discouraging for the following reasons. Society's prejudice and misinformation encourages the view that disabled people are asexual beings. They either don't need or don't want sex, or perhaps they are deviant in some way. So the thought of disabled people having intimate relationships, or, God forbid, sex, is disturbing, even revolting. Many disabled people have low self-esteem and lack confidence because of their concern about their spoiled or damaged body. They feel they are unattractive to the opposite sex and are encouraged in this belief by the worshipping of the perfect body. Disabled people are stigmatized as being dependent, inferior, and helpless. Yet another difficulty is that often parents and the caring professions develop an overprotective attitude to their disabled children or clients. Consciously or unconsciously, they deny them access to information about relationships, sexuality, and contraception. In today's program, we talk with a sex counsellor and an intellectually disadvantaged couple who recently married.
Now to our first interview, Terry speaks with Lydia Fagan, who is a psychologist, part-time lecturer in sexuality and disability, and a consultant in sex counselling.
Earlier this week, I talked with Lydia Fagan about the sexual aspects of relationships where there is a disability. I asked Lydia, what are the most common sexual difficulties that newly physically disabled people have to face?
Well, I think probably the most difficult problem that they have to face is a change in body image and how that affects their expression of their sexuality, not just in their relationship, but in their relationship to the whole of society, not just their own special relationship. And I think that needs to be dealt with very much. The other common difficulties would be ones of, for example, positioning in sexual intercourse and alternatives to sexual expression other than straight sort of traditional intercourse. Mm.
Mm. I can understand that these problems would be very significant for the newly physically disabled. Do they differ in any way from the problems that people who have been born with a disability may experience?
I'm not sure that they would be very different from those who have been disabled from birth. There is one very important aspect, though, that we haven't mentioned so far, and that is that apart from looking at how the disabling condition affects one's sexual expression, you also have to look at how people feel about sex in general and what they know about it in general. Newly disabled people would have brought into their disability a whole host of feelings and information, both about sex and about disability as it affects one's ability to express oneself. And disabled people who have been disabled from birth and who may have spent a lot of time in a very protective environment, be it in an institution or in the family, would have probably grave problems in that their information would have a great lack in information about sex, and they would also have probably been for a very long time throughout their life discouraged from thinking of themselves as sexual beings, or that they have any right to any kind of sexual expression at all. And I think these would be the most difficult to overcome with people who have been born with a disability.
Well, on that point of difficulties to overcome, what about the sexual counselling that exists today in Australia? In what is it adequate in your opinion?
No, I don't think it is adequate. I think there is still a lot of hesitancy on the part of people who are not disabled towards people who are disabled and what their sexuality is. I think there's a lot of confusion, a lot of fear, a lot of concern, and a lot of ignorance. And I think the attitudes are all negative because of that.
Right. Moving now to one particular group, and that's the intellectually disabled. I was wondering if you could tell us what special problems the intellectual disabled bring to counselling.
Well, I think that one of the difficulties when you're talking about people who are intellectually disadvantaged is that they're not a homogeneous group. People often refer to them as a homogeneous group, and they're not. And part of the differences that you find among intellectually disabled people are, of course, their ability to understand and to take in information and to be able then to act upon it in a responsible manner. These are very great difficulties, and in sexual counselling or sex education of intellectually disadvantaged people, you do have to establish for each individual what level of understanding they have, what level of cognition, and what they're going to do with that information, and their level of responsibility in relationships, their ability to make relationships.
And one very contentious issue is the right, really, of intellectually disadvantaged people to have children. What, in your opinion, is the answer to this question?
Look, I find that a very difficult question, and I think that it would be too simplistic to pronounce on it in any general way. You see, I think that everyone has the right to make whatever choice they want in their lives once they've reached adulthood. You do have to take into account, though, their level of responsibility and their level of maturity. Unfortunately, we all tend to assume, or society assumes, that somebody who is not labeled intellectually handicapped or developmentally disabled reaches maturity at whatever age, like 16, 18, or 21, and therefore they can go ahead and do whatever they like, as long as they don't actually kill somebody. But the problem with that is that we all know that people don't necessarily suddenly assume a sense of responsibility to other people and an understanding of their levels of obligation and so on and so forth just because they've reached the age of 16 or 18 or 21 or whatever other age you want to put on the level of maturity. But once somebody has been labeled by society as, say, intellectually handicapped, suddenly we then become very aware of the need to assess a person's level of maturity or responsibility or capacity to take on, you know, responsibility for another human being. And I think this got to be something wrong in the way we deal with this question, and I think we need to think about it more. I would feel very loath to tell somebody they don't have the right to have children.
Now Joan interviews Norma and Dennis Sheedy, two intellectually disadvantaged people who have been married 6 months. We must apologize for the technical faults with the sound during this interview.
Norma and Dennis, I'd just like to ask you now, first of all, how it was that you met? Dennis?
Well, we first met in a workshop some 5 years ago. And from that, we seemed to be listening to grow to like each other. Maybe Norma can
Yes, I like Dennis because I think he was a very, not only was, but is always a nice young man. And I like him very much and I love him for that.
What did you find
about Norma? We seem to communicate ever. We seem to like each other, can't we?
Well, how long was it after you first got married at first date that you decided to get married?
Well, I decided to marry him last week because before then I had myself another young man, but except I had to do all the asking, and Dennis invited me to go out, so I thought, well, Dennis is the one for me.
Dennis, when did you decide that Norma was the one for you?
2 years ago. I was having a problem with another relationship, and I seemed to get on a lot better with Norma. We seemed to, the other girl and I, we just seemed to communicate with them, people in different ways, but with Norma, I seemed to be a lot easier. She didn't want to lose it.
What about you?
Well, I felt sometimes that I could recall and see things. I was like raised between two forms. I liked those boys. So I kept it to myself and I was afraid to tell my mother these things.
When you actually decided to get married, did you undergo any counselling?
Yes, we went to a family planning centre and we had a talk with Lydia Fagan and also we decided, we thought all around what we could do. One of the things we decided is not to have a family.
Why did you decide to do that?
Well, at the time I was 33 and my doctor said to me, he said I'd have to have about 6 months in hospital and I'd have to have fish. I'd have to be under a specialist, and then I could have a baby, and then I'd have to have a cesarean operation, and Dennis couldn't have that.
So Dennis, you decided to have a vasectomy. Could you tell me that before you and Norma had become involved, had you ever had any instructions about sex and sexuality relationships between people?
No, I haven't. Even my parents didn't have to tell me.
Did they just expect that you would never ever have a normal relationship with other women?
Come to think of it now, I do believe that they didn't expect me to have a normal relationship with a girl.
So how did they react when you found Norma and you decided to go ahead and get married?
Well, Mum was very happy because she thought that after my many experiences and that this was going to be the final decision, that I was happy and I was going to settle down. She was very happy for me.
So when did you start counselling and what sort of things did that counselling consist of?
Anyway. are some of those problems?
Monetary situation, like the money from that we're earning weekly, and that we things can't make things meet.
Norma, would you agree with that? Is it only monetary problems, or are there other things as well?
No, I've got a problem with myself too. I spent a whole month having nightmares. One night I was waving Dennis's trousers around, and I was singing out, and Dennis caught me there trying to get the fire out. I also broke an ornament, so it upset me. Then the other night, the night before, I happened to slap Dennis over the face, which I didn't know that I did. And apparently I gave him a big hit because he had a diver's, his cheek was very sore, and it was just about on the verge of going black. Anyway, and when Dennis asked me the next morning, he says, what's the matter with you? I said, I'm all right. I said, I feel good. And Dennis told me that I hit him, and that sort of disturbed me. And I went to my doctor right away, and he said that has happened, that is usual for newly married couples. And he said, explain to me that you've been single for so many years, and now all of a sudden you got your together, and your genes really get a big shock.
It seems to me that the problems that you two are having seem to be typical of ordinary married couples all the way around the world, no matter whether they're disabled or not. I wonder now if you could tell me what advice you would give to other sort of intellectually disadvantaged people if they were thinking about getting married. Norma?
Well, I can tell you one thing, I'll never ever go back to single life, because I know I made a commitment for life on the 21st of May this year, and I'm going to keep it till I'm 100.
Dennis, did you have any advice to give her?
Yes. Anyone that's complicating marriage is that I feel that they should be looking at the areas of family, not having family, because I feel that's a very major issue for a couple. My advice to anyone that is even looking into marriage, no matter if it's intellectual or what, that they should be looking at the issues of whether or not to have a family.
That was Joan speaking with Dennis and Norma. We might send them a card in the 100th anniversary. Let's hope they make it. Awareness Week of Disability commences on Saturday the 19th. That's next Saturday. The week will be opened by the Minister of Youth and Community Services, Mr. Walker. Other highlights of the week include an ecumenical service in the Lyceum Theatre. This service will include a performance by the Self-Raising Theatre of Bathurst. This service will be held on Sunday, the 20th at 2:30. On Wednesday, the 23rd, there will be a fun day of making and flying kites in Victoria Park. It's near Sydney University on the corner of Parramatta Road and City Road. The kites will be flown between 1 and 2. On Thursday at Cleveland Street High School, there will be a sports display. This display is just part of the activities occurring at the school during the week. John Hume is a teacher at Cleveland High. John tells us some more about what's happening there during that week.
Well, we've planned quite a few activities, three in fact. On Monday, years 8, 9 and 10, we'll be seeing John Rorty's film Captives of Care. This film was made during 1981. It's based on John Rorty's book, which was very successful. This film is what we call a factional blend. that is, a mixture of fact and fiction. It stars Tony Ward, who stars himself and recreates a 1973 current affair program in which five residents of a home for the infirm tell of their captivity and care. The film uses people in the home as themselves, although it creates a factional staff of larger-than-life captors. But the dramatic license in the film is valiant in that the audience identifies very much with the disabled characters and lives with them in their fight for their rights and dignity. The film, which brings forth the very strong individuality of each severely disabled cast member, is ideal for discussion starters in promoting awareness, and this is one of the reasons why we've chosen the film to show at Cleveland Street. Following the film, there will be discussions and seminars, and we're hoping that that many of the discussion groups will be led by disabled people themselves in conjunction with the teachers at the school. On Tuesday, we'll be having a panel of speakers to come to the school, and they will follow up many of the issues that have hopefully been raised on the Monday's program. On Thursday, it should be a very exciting day, and in fact, everyone at the school is looking forward to it. We're having a special sports day and demonstration of disabled athletes. Many of them are Olympians who are in training for paraplegic games and various other games that are to be held certainly in the Olympics next year. The first demonstration we're having is of blind table tennis. This is called Swish. That's being held between 11 and 12 o'clock, and we're hoping that a number of the students will participate. Between 12:30 and 1:30, there will be a demonstration of paraplegic basketball. Following the basketball match, between 1:30 and 2 o'clock, we're having a demonstration of wheelchair tennis. The disabled athletes are bringing along several wheelchairs so that many of the students can participate in the demonstration. And between about 2 and 3 o'clock, we're going to have a demonstration of a game called goalball. Now, I've never really heard of goalball before, but I understand that it consists of a team of three players, and it's a little bit like volleyball. I think a ball is thrown over a net, and there will be several students from the school who will be participating with blindfolds. When I mentioned it to one of the teachers today at school, the teacher said, "For goodness sake, that's not playing it fair," and he was referring to the students. I think it's a very fair way of letting them participate and seeing how things go.
Thank you, John. And don't forget the displays in the lower town hall from Tuesday through until Saturday. These displays will include videos of various activities involving disabled people and non-disabled people, thus highlighting the theme of the week, interdependence. Well, that's all for Wheeling Free this week. Next week, Wheeling Free will be devoted completely to Awareness Week, so be sure and listen in.